Hello, Hyrule. Welcome back to the premier Legend of Zelda Travelogue podcast. We are your tour guides. My name is Pete.
And my name is Chris. Hey, Pete.
What's going on, man?
Is it just me or is it getting hot in here?
You know what? Strangely appropriate for the time of year we're recording this, yeah.
Actually, yeah, it is just starting to get warm out.
Which means almost nothing to the... It might be starting to get cold by the time this comes out.
It very well may. Yeah, we're doing kind of a double header. We got a few episodes that will cover two locations. Usually it's because one of the locations is kind of a mini dungeon and probably shouldn't have its own episode. But today we're covering Death Mountain Crater and the Fire Temple in Ocarina of Time.
I don't know if I would call Death Mountain Crater a mini dungeon.
It's like a room for two or three things to happen in.
It's a challenge room at best, I think.
That's even a bit much. Yeah.
Anytime you come in here, it's just like you have 2 minutes before you die. That's the whole idea.
Right. Yeah, it's pushing you out until you get the appropriate equipment to be able to traverse the volcano. But yeah, do you want to give a recap for this one?
A recap. Let's see. We're on a quest now to get spirit medallions from the sages. Right?
Yeah, we're awakening the sages to help seal Ganondorf back in the Sacred Realm.
I don't know if that's the goal from the start, is it? That's just like the thing they decide to do later?
That's the thing that we're doing. We're awakening sages. We're on the sage tour.
In any case, we went to the Forest Temple first. Saria is like a plant zombie now who doesn't really talk, you know, the way she used to. Because we're going to start to pick that up with the sages the more that we meet, where their personality will be subverted by whatever spirit of sageliness enters their body. So
it's not that she's a zombie. It's more that she has a broken heart.
No.
But yeah, we're collecting sages, and coincidentally all of our old friends are sages, because that's how things work in Zelda games sometimes.
I think that's great. I must have said this before. I think that's a great touch where, like, the majority of people you've met previously when you were a kid are now sages when you're a teenager. I think that's great.
Yeah, you get to see their characters kind of grow a little bit as well.
You also Nibiru's there. Yeah.
to jump back like 5 episodes, when we did the Goron City episode with the Legend of Zelda Lorecast crew, we talked about the future of Goron City, where we met Darunia's son, who is also named after Link, whatever you name your Link in this game.
So in your game, he's forgetful of his own name.
Yeah, he's just kind of pensive. His name is and he tells us everyone was taken to the Fire Temple. While my dad was out, Ganondorf's followers came and took them all away. All of them will be eaten by Volvagia. Dad said Ganondorf has revived the dragon as a warning to those who might oppose him. He went to the temple all by himself to save everyone. Please help. I'll give you this heat-resistant tunic.
I forgot how much Darunia was the man in this game.
Yeah, honestly, Darunia is a great Goron.
Yeah, no, the dude rules.
Darunia rules.
So he left by what method he got into the... I mean, he must have, like, gone through his secret back door exit from his chambers, right?
Yeah, there's two entrances to Death Mountain Crater, right? There's, like, going all the way up the volcano, mm-hmm. and there's one, and then there's also the secret entrance in Darunia's room.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Right?
That he has that? Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, I guess you can assume that's the route he took.
Yeah.
So you put on the red tunic, you push that statue out of the way, and you head in.
You head into...
Death Mountain Crater.
So, crater. Crater, the word crater is doing a lot of lifting here, I think, right? This is like the volcano itself.
Do you think this is the volcano itself, or do you think the temple is the volcano itself?
I always assumed that Death Mountain Crater was supposed to be like the mouth of the volcano, right?
Interesting.
Unless this is literally just a crater that a meteor fell into or something.
I mean, yeah, this could be the base of the volcano, and then you're... But here's the thing. So you're working your way down Death Mountain Crater, and at the bottom of Death Mountain mountain crater is where the fire temple starts.
It's where it starts, but you can also climb the actual Death Mountain and towards the top, like go through a door that will lead to the same like area.
And you can kind of jump down there too. Right. So I kind of see what you're saying. So I think Death Mountain is kind of like split into multiple parts, and we're seeing something go all the way down the volcano, but it's like a very small segmented part.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to the base of Death Mountain crater, and that's where the fire temple is, and the fire temple will be an ascent up the volcano. Right? So like we're going down in Death Mountain crater and then back up through the fire temple.
Okay. I mean, that's fine, I guess. I don't know. I just thought it was a strange choice of word for this location.
I agree. Yeah. It's kind of hard to piece together, you know, this being one coherent volcano. Although I do think it does a better job in the fire temple than it does here. This is just supposed to be a place where a cutscene happens,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's a gate that blocks you off from going to the fire temple before you have what you need.
To me, mostly this area is where eventually you get a warp point to where you can come back as a kid and plant a seed. That's the number one reason I come to this place.
That's right. Yeah. So let's talk about it in the present. I mean, you kind of spoke about almost 100% of what you do here as a kid, which is you find some dirt, you can get a gold Skullchilla by planting some bugs in there.
Uh-huh.
And then you can plant magic beans in that same dirt. It'll make a magic bean plant that you can ascend in the future for a heart piece. Which, what kind of plant grows in the heart of a volcano?
It's the kind that grows literally anywhere else. Like, if it just has appropriately square dirt, mm-hmm. that it can jump into, then that is enough for a bean.
Yeah, fair enough.
I actually think, Chris, that this might be the worst place in the game.
This is very low on my list as well.
There's nothing going on here, first off. Like, you're here for maybe one side quest. It's not even a side quest. You're here to put a bean in the ground so you can get a heart piece later. That's not a lot. That's really not a lot.
It kind of reminds me, I think there was like a brief volcano moment in Skyward Sword.
There was a lot of volcano moments in Skyward Sword.
Right, but there was the Earth Temple and the Fire Temple, which were like two big moments.
Uh-huh. Fire Sanctuary, but yes.
Fire Sanctuary. But then wasn't there also a third fire area in between them or after them that was much briefer?
There was the Splinter Cell Ascent that you had to like sneak around and get your equipment back.
Yeah. So, okay. It's not a direct parallel, but yeah, this is just like a little brief detour, I guess. Speaking of the future of Death Mountain Crater, there are red bubbles. I don't know if there are bubbles in the present.
Wait, there's red bubbles here? I don't remember ever seeing one.
I believe so, yeah.
Huh.
There's a broken down bridge that we can hookshot to in the distance.
A wooden bridge.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, huh?
At the base of a huge lava lake.
I mean, it's melting. It's just melting surprisingly slowly.
Melting is an interesting choice of word here, Chris, for this.
That's what wood does.
It's a wooden bridge held up with rope.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and after Kakariko Village in the future, you get the hookshot, you hookshot over, and we're greeted by a friend.
An acquaintance. A co-worker, maybe.
A co-worker that you discover much later that you're actually super close with, but you didn't know.
That's up for debate.
you see Sheik here. Sheik just like starts in the middle of a thought, it feels like, in this moment. Sheik says, "It is something that grows over time, a true friendship, a feeling in the heart that becomes even stronger over time."
Oh, I thought you were talking about the bean plant.
No. I mean, that also. The passion of friendship will soon blossom into a righteous power, and through it, you will know which way to go. This song is dedicated to the power of the heart. Listen to the Bolero of Fire.
What was the whole point of this, like, diatribe about friendship, do you think?
Darunia, I guess. Brother. Your brother.
Does Zelda know that we're friends with Darunia?
I don't know. It feels like this is the... I can't associate this with anything else other than the fact that the person that we're going to see in just a minute,
uh-huh.
is, like, the biggest bro of the game.
There's other... It's just so strange to me, because, like, there'll be times where Sheik in another area will give you a song and be like, hey, here's the Nocturne of Shadow. This will send you to that spot above the cemetery, you know, in another map.
Yeah.
Or, like, like, oh, hey, here's this song that'll send you to Lake Hylia. We're not there right now. That'd be interesting, you know, but here's me talking about it to you.
Uh-huh.
Here in the volcano, Sheik is like, here's the Bolero of Fire. It'll send you to this exact spot later. Friendship is cool. I guess I'll go now.
Yeah, it's, I'm not going to lie. I'm glad you're kind of bringing this up, because going back and reading this dialogue, it does feel kind of forced and like it doesn't serve much of a purpose.
They're definitely teens. No more apparent than with Sheik's behavior, because like, I'm mysterious. I'm aloof.
Yeah, this is for sure her trying to give off Sheik trying to give off the vibe of being poetic and mysterious.
Mm-hmm,
also,
mm-hmm.
How is Sheik not boiling hot? We absolutely could not enter this volcano without getting some red clothes. Sheik's not wearing red clothes. Sheik's wearing blue clothes.
Apparently, she drank one of the Breath of the Wild potions that keeps your body from bursting into flames.
I want that potion. I would have loved that potion. Okay, fair enough. She says, Link, she teaches you the Bolero of Fire. She says, Link, I'll see you again. Throws up a firewall for no great reason. It's not like, what? Okay, what's this? Then Deku nuts out of the volcano.
Wait, she creates a firewall?
Yeah, she puts some distance between herself and Link with a firewall, and then Deku nuts out. As if Link was going to grab onto her arm or something to stop her from leaving.
Wait a minute. I think this might have been what you're referring to. I think this might have been just like a gout of like lava flame or something like spitting up between the bridge.
Oh, you think so?
I think so.
Because that straight up doesn't happen after the cutscene.
Yeah.
I do like that as a building the atmosphere of the level and whatnot.
Uh-huh. Like, it's just like a plume of burning gas, and then, you know, mm-hmm. Sheik's like, oh, I should go. I'm gonna go now.
One last thing to talk about in the Death Mountain crater there, once we get the item that we'll be getting in the Fire Temple, mm-hmm. which is the Megaton Hammer. I'm just gonna say it now because it serves a purpose to know it now.
Plus, the game is ancient, guys.
Yeah.
You get the power of big bonks and you bonk some boulders open.
Yeah, and there's a magic fairy in here. A great fairy of wisdom here. And she enhances your magic power, so your magic meter grows.
Hooray! I mean, okay.
Gives us twice as much magic.
What do I even use magic for in this game? I'm trying to remember.
Din's fire sometimes.
Din's fire costs 2 MP.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really gonna cause you any problems.
Yeah, I don't know. I was never hurting for more magic meter. But you know, everyone plays this game a bit differently. I've seen, so like, sometimes to research these episodes, I go on YouTube and I watch people do like playthroughs or let's plays,
mm-hmm.
and the amount of people who actually use Feroar's Wind to do warp points blows my mind. Never used that.
That spell does kind of rule. Not gonna lie about that. And like, I guess if you really want to splurge on using the Eye of Truth,
there you go. That might be worth using. Wait, the Eye of Truth is for Mysterious Walls, right?
It's Mysterious Walls and like invisible stuff, and like, yeah. If you want to keep it up for a really long time, then I guess you could do that.
I mean, listen, a lot of people do 100% runs. This is a stop you're going to want to make, at least for that.
You unlocked percentage.
Yeah, there you go. One last thing before we dive into the Fire Temple. In the Death Mountain crater, we start to see some of the symbols that will populate the Fire Temple as well. Loremaster Kex from the Discord brought up a great detail about a face that is recurring throughout these two locations. Did you see the face I sent you?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like these, like, rudimentary ancient Goron faces?
Kind of. You could look at it as a Goron face. But as Death Mountain Crater transitions into the Fire Temple, we start to see this on the outskirts of the Fire Temple, right? So this face has some relation to the Fire Temple itself. And just a fun detail that I kind of like that Kex had pointed out at one point. What if this face could be the Dragon Eldin from Skyward Sword?
I'm going to put a hard no on that, man. I don't know.
But give it a second, because look at this. We're going to see this face on the top of a statue.
Okay.
And this would be Skyward Sword developers trying to put in details to match up nicely with Ocarina of Time.
So you think retroactively someone saw these Fire Temple statues and designed
Eldin from Skyward Sword to be what these faces might be referring to, what might be worshipped in this temple, because you'll see a full-sized version of this statue in just a minute in the Fire Temple.
Yeah.
And you see these stripes going down its chest. And then when you look at Eldin as he's out of the lava and just kind of flying, floating about, Eldin has very similar stripes going all the way down his chest as well.
The stripes being lava that is pouring down his body.
Yeah, but it doesn't animate downward, as well as he has this very oval-like mouth, and he has a gem at the center of his forehead, which are all characteristics that the carving has in the Fire Temple.
Man, I don't know. This is like...
It might be a bit of a stretch, but it could be a fun little, you know, nod that the Skyward Sword devs made.
It's very funny to think this must be, if that's the case, and the Fire Temple is like one of the oldest temples on Hyrule, because you go to the Fire Sanctuary and the Earth Temple and Skyward Sword, those statues are much more elaborate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of that is a game that was developed 20 years after, or however.
I know, but if we're going for the kayfabe here, that like, hey, maybe, you know, this is actually that, then maybe, but like, I'd have to, you know, Uno reverse card some imagination on that, you know?
No, totally. There's also a room full of these faces as we descend into the Fire Temple that I found incredibly creepy. Like, there's just a ladder going downward, and there's just these three towering faces staring at you as you descend it.
Okay. I think we're gonna have to just accept that they didn't have a theme in mind for the Fire Temple outside of fire, obviously.
Yeah, I can't look at the Fire Temple and point at it and be like, oh, this is for this purpose or that purpose.
Yeah.
It's hard to decipher.
Yeah.
Who built this? What's the purpose of this structure?
Complete opposite of the Forest Temple, where like you could probably piece together some stuff based on context within the game and without of the game. In this, we're just flying blind, man.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. That's a fun little detail. I could see arguments being made either way, but I like the idea that they might have done that.
I see those faces doing nothing but burping. That's all I think about, like, from the face they're making.
And on that note, let's go to the Fire Temple.
It's a little toasty.
This is the game's volcano dungeon. Every game has to have one.
Almost every game, but yeah.
Almost every game. This one is very symmetrical. There's a lot of C-shaped rooms kind of flipped both ways. And this is kind of cool. I like this because if you think about it, you're ascending the exterior of the interior of the volcano.
No, come on.
You're ascending a volcano, right? So it's like the circular motion going up a volcano.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes sense that you would have a C room facing this way and then a C room facing this way and
sure.
Then a C room. It's cool. There are a bunch of these structures that I mentioned here. It's sort of Mao tiki structures with these faces.
It's very, very, very broadly grabbing at different cultures here.
Yeah, there are also symbols kind of carved into all the walls. I think there are many more in the 3DS version than the N64 version.
I gotta tell you, that first room with the big stairs,
mm-hmm.
There are three statues with like screaming mouths and like fire in like a little window in them.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've played this game and sworn up and down the block that those are incorporated in a puzzle somehow.
Well, they may be.
They're not.
In master mode, they may be.
Wait, really?
I don't know. We'll have to get there on this episode's version of Master Quest Question Masters.
I was just thinking, because so many times, Chris, I have gone through this dungeon and gotten stuck for one reason or another,
mm-hmm.
especially in my most recent randomizer run, where I didn't realize you needed the Megaton Hammer to smash certain statues aside. Not these ones that I'm referring to, but these ones that are meshed with the wall.
Yep.
It makes so much sense that like something will turn the fire off and you can shoot a button in their mouth or something, right?
Sure.
But that never happens.
That would be, see, it would be too easy. That feels like a post Ocarina of Time, right? So like there was the period from Ocarina of Time to like Skyward Sword where like everything was a variation of Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
And that puzzle is in every subsequent game between Ocarina and then, I feel like.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That might be why, because that was so common in the Ocarina era of Zelda games.
But yeah, you know, we talked about how this was kind of like a place of worship, but there were also walls of fire and traps and fake doors. So it's like simultaneously a holy place and a prison, which is like, what?
I mean, again, okay. Twin Rova had their way with this place before we came through. There's that's stuff
like your,
marked.
That's like your evil Hylia. That's like, yeah. Why is this thing? It's Hylia. Why is this evil thing? It's Twin Rova.
It's Twin Rova. Why does this puzzle make no sense? Why does this dungeon make no sense? It's Twin Rova.
I like it.
Because she did a Rubik's Cube spell on it to make it like a puzzle house.
Yeah.
So that you have trouble getting places.
I mean, if you want to send an imposing message, the first thing you're going to do is mess around with the volcano. Make the volcano do next. Nasty stuff. That's how you scare everyone. There's a whole village at the bottom of the volcano. They thought that was a good idea, the bell.
Honestly, the fact that Ganondorf and Twin Rova, neither of them had the idea to make Death Mountain erupt and just kill everyone in Kakariko.
They want people to rule over. They don't want to destroy the planet. They want to rule the planet.
Are you sure? I don't know if that's true.
At least in Wind Waker, I think they make that distinction.
Maybe. Like, the majority of the time, Ganondorf doesn't seem to have any interest in ruling. Like, he doesn't have laws or whatever that he enacts. It's just like, I'm gonna kill everyone, then I rule over the bodies.
I think it's like the discrepancy between what we see in the game and what we see in the text of the game. But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. There's a little bit of controversy in wrapped up in the Fire Temple. In the initial run of the N64 game, Koji Kondo used samples from a CD called Voice Spectral Volume 1.
Oh, you have the name of the... Okay.
I did, because I have the CD, obviously. And he used some samples that contained Arabic chants.
Yeah.
That said, essentially, I'm translating, or, you know, the wiki translated, may God grant peace and honor him and his family, the Lord of Majesty and Generosity, in the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, God is great.
Referring to Eldin, of course.
No, actually, it's referring to Muhammad, but close enough, I'm sure. Maybe.
Close,
maybe edit
very
that
close
out. Maybe
second.
But yeah, so Nintendo is a pretty strict, like, hey, let's keep religion out of these games policy.
Yeah. Weird, considering the very first game had the Holy Bible in it.
It did, didn't it? Kondo didn't know about these chants. I just thought it kind of felt right with the music, and he took it out of future presses of the N64 and GameCube game.
Sure.
And in later releases, this vocal track was just removed, and there's this like sort of deep oscillating synth noise that kind of replicates it, but it really does lose something.
You think so?
Yeah, there's something kind of deep and kind of eerie. I don't want to say eerie because I don't mean it in a disrespectful way, but like it adds to the feel of this being like a temple, like
worshiping
like,
place.
Yeah, it totally does.
That's a soapbox I'm gonna be having for this entire game, I think, where it's like the dungeons don't have memorable music. They have themes, they have stuff that plays in the background, but it's not music.
Yeah, it's not as much as, you know, it is in other games. They add to the tone of the dungeons, but they're not like something you'll be humming in your head afterwards for the most part.
No, not at all.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the enemies in here.
Great.
Oh god. I want to do a full, you think we could do like a full PokéRap of Zelda enemies at some point?
Maybe
in like a Ganon's Tower episode where they kind of throw everything at you.
If you do a PokéRap of Zelda monsters, do you include the different element variations, or do you just say keys?
You have to. Listen, as someone who has sung the name of enemies on this very show, you have to take what you can get. Elements count as separate enemies.
Dang, that might be make it a little more rough, I think.
It might, yeah. So we have fire keys, flying tiles, door mimics, and like-likes in here.
Well, I think there's also fire slugs? What are they called? Lava slugs.
Torch slugs. Yeah. Torch slugs kind of are just like goopy, like broken down like-likes on the ground. They look like gum on the, like a big wad of gum on the ground that fire occasionally comes out of.
Weird how the classic enemy of torch slug never caught on and just, you know, was famously in Breath of the Wild and such.
We also have red bubbles.
Lava bubbles.
Are they called lava bubbles?
I think they're called lava bubbles, yeah.
They're bubbles. We talked about bubbles. Yeah. We talked about them extensively in the last episode.
Except these ones live in lava and they jump out out and nip at your heels when you're trying to go places.
Oh, yeah. There's some tense moments where these things just kind of pop up out of nowhere. But otherwise, they're handled the same way. We have multiple ways of taking them down.
Can I really quick just address the fire keys in the room here?
Please.
The first, there's multiple rooms in this dungeon that feature fire keys. There are a couple rooms that you come back to frequently that you, every time you come through this room, you have to deal with the fire keys. The enemies that you kill don't stay dead, which I feel is something that I took for granted in other Zelda games. At least, like, once you leave the dungeon and come back, they'll respawn. That's fine, whatever. But every time I come to the main foyer of the fire temple, I don't want to fight these fire keys again.
Yeah, I guess it's a lot.
There's five doors in this one room, and anytime you come in and out of those doors, you gotta fight the fire keys.
And fire keys aren't hard to fight, but, like, it's a whole thing to lock onto them and then pull out your arrow, and then if you're aiming down sight, it takes an extra couple seconds. It's just a bit tedious.
It's a chunk of your life you're not getting back is the point.
yeah, it certainly is. There's also mini bosses and a boss. We'll tackle them in just a bit. But yeah, let's start talking about these rooms.
If we're going to talk about rooms, we can. There's a couple that I want to mention, which are the only ones that feature like-likes and flying tiles.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
I know which rooms you're talking about.
I get the impression whenever I walk into one of these that it's like the changing room at a public pool. But then you go through and like the tiles rise up out and fly at your head. So if you stand there and block them until they're all gone, that's fine.
They do this stuff in the 2D games all the time, right?
Oh, constantly.
This is like Link to the Past, like just stand here and take care of the flying tiles until they're clear.
Yeah, I don't like an enemy that just requires you to wait.
Big, dude, I'm with you. No bueno. Especially like in the 2D games where you're just swiping your sword and just getting rid of them until they stop.
You could, that's an option. You don't have to do that, but you can do that.
Yeah, you could be a skilled player and only swipe when you need to, but listen, I've been playing Link to the Past for 30 years, and you just mash that button until they're gone.
But then at the back of each room, there is one like-like and one golden sculptula.
Okay.
And I have to wonder why there's two of this identical room in this dungeon.
Yeah, I mean,
One is hidden behind a time block that you have to sing down with your ocarina. And then the other one you encounter as a normal process of completing the dungeon.
I like these being like sermon rooms. I mean, I know you want to figure out why the sculptula is there.
Sure. Right?
And that's because the priest or whoever does the sermons got that bad spider curse.
Yeah.
But I do like, because it's like a big open room, and then there's just the face at the front of it, right? Mm-hmm. And the like, and it's like an elevated platform where the like is, just slightly, right? So it's like, it's almost like a gathering room, and you can picture someone up there.
You guys want to sit down in this fully tiled bathroom and just like listen to a sermon, I guess.
It does look like, yeah, like the it's funny, I'm currently like building a bathroom at my house, and I'm looking at the tiles in this room, and it's like, oh yeah, I could get those tiles for less than $3 a square foot. Like, for sure. Just put them all over the room.
Is this maybe like a sauna or something? Because this is still in a volcano.
It is, but it's a temple.
Is it one of those things where you meditate and like you just have to like deal with the heat and whatnot?
There's also like next to the face that we've been talking about, there are these eye-like symbols. Do you see them to the left and right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy, I didn't even think about that.
I don't think, I mean, like, look, in Ocarina of Time, if you want to draw a correlation with an eye-like symbol, the only thing you got is Sheikah, and I am not about to associate this temple with Sheikah.
There's either, okay, you have Sheikah, or you have something that is affected by Malice, or maybe Vati, which could be that too.
Vati has the upside-down eye, I guess, yeah, but I don't know. It's just a big, empty, rectangular room that attacks you.
Or maybe Nintendo hadn't come to terms with their theming yet for this franchise, and we're just way overthinking it. Nope, it's definitely Vati.
It's definitely Vati. Did we have like-likes in this game prior to this room?
Oh, let's see. Did we? I don't think so.
So, like, here's the thing. A like-like can eat your shield, right?
Yes.
Which is annoying to deal with. So I'm guessing just gameplay-wise, they wanted to give you a big open room to deal with a like-like in.
Plenty of space.
So that you can figure it out at your own own pace. I mean, of course, the tiles come at you, but there's so much distance between you and the like when the tiles are coming at you,
yeah,
that you're probably not dealing with the like at the same time.
So it's kind of like the mentality when you're trying to deal with a bug in your room. Like, you want as much clearance as humanly possible just so you can focus.
Yeah, it's like how they give you, the first time you see Redeads, they're not letting the Redeads freeze you, right? They're giving you like a, okay, explore this thing's movement and whatnot. Later, we might get you with one of these guys. So know the rule set now. So taking a step back out of these rooms, there is this main room. You mentioned the staircase going up, right? And the heads. I don't think there's much more to talk about in that first room there.
Yeah, there's a couple doors that lead to captive Goron rooms.
Right. There is this room I want to talk about where we first see Darunia, though.
Hey, audience applause.
It's our guy, Darunia. Darunia's in here. He mentions how much we've grown since we last saw him. And he says that we need to talk man to man, but now is not the time. Ganondorf has revived the evil dragon Volvagia and is going to feed the Gorons to the dragon as warning to the other races who resist. So he says, if Volvagia escapes, it'll torch all of Hyrule, and he asks us to save the other Gorons while he goes in and takes care of the dragon. He then just walks into a boss door.
Oh, thank you. How did you go through this door, Darunia, and how did you lock it behind you?
Yeah, let's be clear. We see the boss lock open and close in this moment.
Okay, maybe they had a separate key under the mat.
Maybe?
Oh, that's what the rug is! Back in Goron City, that's what the rug is. He puts the boss key under the mat that he uses for the fire temple.
And he locks the door behind him to make sure that you go back and save the other Gorons, because he knows that you're going to be excited to fight a dragon.
Dog, there is one Goron 5 feet away from him saying this.
Yeah, and he did not save him.
He's right there. All he has to do is step on a switch, and the gate will open, the Goron will be freed, the dude is sitting there cowering for his life because he's going to be fed to a dragon, and his chieftain? What is the name of the leader of Goron City?
Chieftain.
Yeah, the chief?
I might be wrong about that, but it feels right.
Chief feels right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So your chief, big, brave, bold, brash, is talking to this guy who you maybe don't even recognize and says, hey, you handle this. I'm going to go ignore this guy who I could easily save in 2 seconds flat. And I'm going to go feed myself to a dragon.
Yeah. Darunia is trigger happy. He is itching for a fight. He doesn't want to do anything else. He doesn't want to do any of the boring stuff in this dungeon.
Which on one hand, I can respect that.
I guess so. It's also incredibly careless because he goes into the boss room without the one thing you need to defeat this boss.
Yeah.
And assumedly eats it. Assuming he eats it.
He could eat it, or Rauru snatched him up, because that's kind of what he Rauru's one for snatching up. He loves doing that to the sages.
I think, I don't know. I think my ongoing theory is something that Jake planted in the Kakariko episode. I'm thinking the sages are no longer on this planet, are no longer with us.
Oh, okay. That's two different things you just said.
Yeah. No, these sages have left their mortal shells.
They have left the building.
And in some cases, it's, you know, because they made peace with their purpose, in like Saria's case. And in some cases, it's because they tried to fight a dragon without any weapons.
There's a great question of like, what happens to Rudo in the Water Temple? Well, I mean, we have an idea of what happens to Nibiru, but like, there's other ones that don't really make sense.
Yeah. And we'll be sure to tackle each of those as we go through the dungeons.
Sure.
But yeah, in this room, we find a locked up Goron. We release him. He tells us, in order to get to the room where Darunia went, you'll have to do something about the pillar stuck in the ceiling. Just kind of like hinting at a puzzle in a future room.
Sure. Most of the Gorons, when you save them in this place, they give you a hint.
Yeah, they give you a little hint about what to do throughout the dungeon. Most of the time, they refer to a Goron crop.
Yeah, is there a reason they don't just say bomb flowers?
It's world building, right? They thought it was cute world building. And then they just ended up making it sound like the Gorons are maybe drug dealers.
Would they not say bomb flower to each other?
Yeah, is that like how every zombie movie tries to get cute and not name zombies?
Mm-hmm. We have to call it something else because zombie media doesn't exist in this world or something, right?
I guess so. But like, other things are calling things bomb flowers and like bomb chews, and like bomb is explicitly a thing in this world.
I'm glad they kind of got over it later in the timeline, though.
Oh, they got like bomb steak, right? Like, they're like, oh no, we're putting the word bomb in everything in Goron City.
No, it's not the Goron special crop.
Yeah, Goron seasoned steak.
Yeah, also, y'all didn't invent bomb flowers. Like, they've been growing on cacti since, like, thousands of years ago.
In any case, some other... We'll just talk about rooms that stand out to us, as we always do in these dungeon episodes.
Mm-hmm.
There's like, this main cavern that actually is really cool. I spent a lot of time in here on my randomizer run recently, where there's, like, a giant bridge in the center.
Wood and rope.
Yes, yeah, wood and rope. Two things that absolutely should be ablaze. And there are floating platforms moving left and right.
With jets!
What is this temple? What is this temple?
Okay. I suspect that the jet platforms are new. That's the first thing.
Okay. You think that's a Darunia special?
I think that it might be for Darunia's sake, or maybe, I don't know, the bad guys put it in for whatever reason. I think mainly this big chasm room, which, by the way, I think is kind of interesting that this whole temple is carved out of rock. It's not just a straight up its own building.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Anyway, but I have a suspicion that this room looked a lot different before it was flooded with lava.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
I guess that makes sense. I you know, you mentioned something a minute ago with that sauna idea, and I do like the idea that, like, Darunia and, like, the Gorons that are in, like, his tight five, like his close friends, the Darunia and, like, the Gorons that are, like, his close friends, like, all kind of snuck into the volcano and had, like, a few hangout rooms.
Uh-huh.
Like a little Goron man cave back here.
Man cove, and Chris, please.
Man cove? Man crater?
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, again, the insistence on calling this a temple, and I think that's just they wanted to name all of these things temples.
Sure.
And implying that there's some religious tie somewhere here is what makes it
that
muddy.
That could be. You're like a sage of a thing. Like, there's like mystic powers of some kind. It's never been clear.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's this fun lava room. It leads to a couple of places. To the left, there are there's like a room with a Goron to rescue. And there's a Song of Time block,
right,
that we can kind of transfer up and down that will get us into another like room.
That happens a few times in this dungeon.
Yeah. There are a few Temple of Time blocks in this dungeon. Which, does that imply anything?
I could not even begin. Someone is mucking about with time blocks. I don't know what or who or why.
Right, because these Temple of Time blocks don't just disappear. They move specifically to other places in the same room.
What is that? What does that mean? Okay, so here's the thing. I don't think that's moving the block. I think that's shifting one block elsewhere in time and then shifting another from time into the new spot.
Oh, it's a time block trade.
There's two, yeah, exactly. It's a geocaching.
No. Is that what geocaching is?
No, not even close. But I do think that's like whenever you see a time shift stone switch places, I think that's actually two shifting in time at that point. Because otherwise, what does it mean? You're shifting it to a point in time where someone pushed it? What is that?
Yeah, if that's not what's happening, it's not so much about time as it is about a 5-foot distance in the same moment.
Also, speaking of, you're telling me I can't push these?
With what? Like you don't get that power bracelet what? Until later in the game.
You get golden gauntlets and iron boots, and that'll keep you in place, and that's still not enough to push these.
No, you don't know what it's made of. That's time shift stuff.
Time shift
stone. You never see anyone lifting time. Oh, I guess you see.
You lift it in Skyward Sword.
Do you lift time shift stone, or do you?
There's
you
like
see
a sphere.
It?
There's like a sphere of it you pick up for like one of the puzzles.
Oh, you're totally right. Yeah, I don't know. These are some of the weirdest puzzle elements in this whole game.
I'm calling Nintendo on their shenanigans from, what, the 90s?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to lose too much sleep over it. You get two keys from saving some Gorons in this area. And then a much more interesting room to me is this fire elevator room.
Oh, Chris. If we're not careful, the fire elevator room might be the rest of the episode.
Okay. I'm okay with this. I like this room. So you enter this room and there's a giant grate in front of you.
It's like a chain link fence.
And there's a beacon of fire occasionally exploding in the distance.
Like a gout of exploding lava gas, right? From outside.
Yeah. And there's a block with these faces on it, which yeah. I guess the face denotes that this block is much lighter than the time blocks outside of here, because Link can push this block. And you push it right into that erupting fire, and you can ride that thing.
Slotting perfectly into a square hole in the ceiling, which the lava geyser will push the block all the way up to a perfect point to where you can step off onto the next floor, like an elevator.
Yeah, totally like an elevator, but you're right. Like, what? Why? Why?
And if you look at the bridge where this block is that you push it off of, this was a bridge that was sitting here and has since been eroded away by, I assume, the lava geyser that's been shooting up.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah.
So this wasn't meant to be on this lava geyser as an elevator, yet it works perfectly as one.
Would you look at that?
What is this?
As far as a coherent room telling you of its purpose, I have no idea. But I do, again, I like the feeling of ascending up this volcano throughout the dungeon.
Yeah, totally.
And I do think this room does successfully convey that.
Yeah, fine.
I'm giving it whatever credit I can.
So iron cages is like new to the place, right? Someone put that in new?
Right, yeah. The cages that are locking up these Gorons. Okay. It's not like, were the Gorons locking something up? Were they locking Dodongo up in here? We also see no Dodongo throughout the Fire Temple, right? So Dodongo's cavern must be a completely separate thing on the side of the volcano, but definitely not the volcano.
They're already going extinct.
Yeah, they're done, so.
Yeah, no, we delivered a critical blow to their species, unfortunately.
Right. Okay.
Get some Dove soap commercials where we're cleaning them up and whatnot, so we can save them. But there's the plank, the wooden plank that leads down to this area. I'm wondering if this is like a spot that broke down because of the lava destroying that bridge, and so they were going to do a construction on it.
Okay, sure.
That explains half of this room. The block that slots perfectly into the ceiling.
I mean, it could just be like we see this geyser of lava just erupting over and over again. That block could be from the ceiling and it just nudged loose over time and just fell straight down and is now just getting bounced around. Why it ended up on this platform to be pushed down by Link, I don't have a good answer for that.
Okay.
But it could just be that was the ceiling at some point, I guess.
You know what? Actually, that's not a terrible explanation.
I mean, it's the only thing that makes sense when you look at how perfectly it slots in.
Yeah, okay. So then the only thing remaining is why is it that it stops perfectly at the point where it can, stop and you can just step off gently like an escalator?
Video games. Yeah, I don't know. I got nothing. That's gamey-whamey stuff right there.
Extreme objection to this room in particular.
Okay, but I mean, again, it makes sense, right? Because we will see this face platform on both the floor and on the wall, right?
Sure.
So it's not weird to think, this could have been a ceiling tile. This could have been a floor tile in the floor above.
Yeah.
So I guess the fire could have been, that geyser could have been erupting just enough to sort of tickle the bottom of the ceiling for years and years. Let's say 7 years exactly. Exactly. Breaking that part of the ceiling down.
It made it just perfectly brittle to the point where the block, as it falls down, finally, it chips off the rest, cleaving it to a perfect square shaft.
There you go. That's I can't believe this is going to be the thing that we talk the most about in this episode, like, by far. Yeah, so we solved it. We 100% came to the correct conclusion.
So stupid.
Next room after the lava elevator, there's this room with like a bunch of timed switches where you got to kind of like toss a bomb off, climb up a ledge, toss a bomb off a ledge.
Right.
Once the switch gets hit, it brings down a lava barrier somewhere that's guarding a ladder, and you just got to run up that ladder.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I guess, a type of puzzle that's somewhat unique to this temple. It's definitely the first time we're seeing it. I'm not sure if it pops back up in future temples.
You're talking about the boulder labyrinth?
I'm talking about the switches, the bomb switches.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Those rooms are, I think, one of the best examples of Twin Rova's puzzle magic having to have an out for you. You can't just be put in a locked room.
Oh, okay. I kind of like that, right? Because we know Twin Rova fires orbs off from a distance, right?
She can just activate this whatever angle she wants.
If that room doesn't cause a headache for anyone, it's Twin Rova and Twin Rova only, pretty much.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, it's checking out.
But yeah, no, I don't think they do this in other dungeons, now that you mention it. Maybe in Ganon's Castle?
Maybe, I'm thinking either Shadow Temple, Spirit Temple, or Ganon's Castle. Yeah, maybe something towards the tail end, but I'm not 100%
sure. That's almost all the ones that are left.
Not in the water temple. Next interesting room is the boulder maze. In case you were trying to tie this to a place of worship, there's just a full-on boulder maze in here, gang.
The Indiana Jones vibes are good.
Sure.
It's kind of cool. It is mysterious how the boulders will change course, depending on whether they reach the end of their path or if they hit you.
Are they sentient? Do you think that they could be like Malice Gorons?
I don't know. I mean, some of the wikis list boulders and rocks as enemies, so...
Sure. It could certainly be. There's fake walls in here with Skulltulas. Some of the Gorons will point you to bombing fake walls. You know, fake walls make a different sound than real walls. We've talked about this in multiple Zelda games prior. A bunch of Gorons in this boulder puzzle. See, this is another one that's like, I like this more as a place where Gorons hung out and had fun, more than like a place of worship.
Oh, like they rolled around in here?
Yeah, they were. Oh my gosh, Gorons would have the time of their lives just rolling around.
Actually, yeah.
Now they're all kicked out of the volcano, just rolling up and down the exterior.
Well, now, right now, they're all currently cowering in cages.
Sure, sure, sure. But 7 years ago.
Which, have I mentioned how, like, sad it is to see these big, you know, strong Gorons just curl up in a ball and shaking?
Yeah.
I don't love it. I don't love that.
No, especially because, like, they're the little sweeties of the Zelda franchise. You don't want to see them going through this.
Yeah.
There is one Goron who I believe is in this room. It's, like, in an elevated portion of this room. Mm-hmm. And he's not actually behind a cage. He's just in an area that you have to like kind of jump to.
I think it's both. I think there is a cage door that you have to like hit a thing to make it retract.
I think that what you do is you bomb the floor above it and you fall down. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. All I remember is there was one Goron that wasn't behind a cage. He was just kind of waiting for you. And you talk to him and he's like, am I free now? And you're like, and then he's just like, awesome, thanks, and runs off. And like, you're like, I didn't open anything, dude. Okay.
I think this same Goron, the one that you're talking about, I think his hint that he gives you when you, you know, set him free, quote unquote, it literally equates to stop, drop, and roll.
Oh.
Which I appreciate so much.
Yeah, he says that if you're on fire, you can jump around and it'll wave off the fire. Is that what it is or something?
It's something like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, if something sets you on fire, you can roll on the ground and feel better.
Yeah.
Which just a Goron telling you to roll around is very good to me.
That actually makes a lot of sense and is kind of fun. There's another room nearby that's...
If I had to guess, can I guess before you say it, Chris?
Yeah.
Chris, is it the firewall trap running along a chain link platform room?
It absolutely is.
The insane thief trap room?
Yeah. Like, again, this is a torture. Why would you do this?
This is an Ultramax security zone. Like, there's probably some kind of relic that they wanted to protect in here. Which, hey, maybe it's the one we're going to get later.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, so Link jumps onto the top of a grated fence, and all of a sudden a wall of fire appears behind him and starts slowly inching towards him, and you've got to just kind of jet to the end of the room
right.
As Fire Keys and Red Bubble pop up from the ground.
Oh, you can completely ignore those as you run, honestly.
Yeah, it's not terribly difficult.
There's one spot that you can hop onto a pillar to reach another door, but you need a key to enter it. If you don't know that to begin with, you will probably get pretty stressed out. Because you lost ground in order to get there.
Yeah. Also, every jump in this game is a forced jump. There's no jump button, right? So exactly. It's just like a matter of like, oh, you have to kind of aim everything right, but it's not too bad.
For the longest time, I swore that while the firewall was chasing you, the chain link platforms were also lowering into the lava.
I like that idea.
Could you imagine?
That would have been I mean, it kind of doesn't matter, right? Because like once that firewall gets to you, the chain link is useless. It's kind of like either one of those things coming to fruition is going to fully kill Link.
Right, that's the whole idea. Like, this is just the kill you room.
Right, right. This is the bad place. But yeah, I can't see a room designed like this and not think of Mario Maker, of like the auto rooms generated through that game.
See, exactly. You'd get nothing but rooms like this if there was a Zelda Maker game.
Yeah, you absolutely would. I also still really hope that one day we do get that Zelda Maker.
That'd be tough. It would just have to be dungeons and that's it.
It would just have to be dungeons. And we got kind of a taste of that in Link's Awakening remake, and I gotta be honest with you, I spent almost zero time. I had to spend time in it to get a heart piece, but I kind of wish.
Wait, really? You had to do that?
Yeah, you have to do like five of them to get a heart piece.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, there's always a gotcha with the heart pieces. It's fine. Speaking of fire temple rooms, though, from there, there's really only one or two left that are worth mentioning, I think, before the boss room. There's this one really kind of cool room where there are a bunch of statues on the ground that will breathe fire at you. And also...
Yeah, Chris, I take it back. This is the worst room in the dungeon.
But it's interesting. So there are a bunch of pillars throughout the room. It's a very big open room.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of pillars throughout it. There are pillars that are either spitting fire in circles,
yeah,
or there are pillars seemingly doing nothing until you walk super close to them, and then a firewall pops up out of nowhere.
We've got boulders. We've got flame wall traps. We've got geyser traps. We've got fake door traps.
It's almost like the thesis of the dungeon was supposed to be traps, but then they built three quarters of the dungeon without putting traps in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh, shoot, we have a trap quota to hit. Let's put all of the traps in this one room.
Why is this the fire temple?
Why is this the fire temple?
Because I know, like, Mayor's supposed to be going for, like, you know, Legends of the Hidden Temple or, like, Temple of Doom vibes, yeah, where it's like, oh hey, tons and tons and tons of traps to keep invaders from getting the treasure, right? That's the whole idea.
Sure.
But when you don't know what this place is actually for, it just comes across as kind of cruel, especially with the fake doors. I hate the fake doors so much.
If you're working at this temple before it goes to ruin and you're like a new hire on the job, this is like your least... Oh, I'm on clean the relic duty. Okay, I gotta get past this room again. That one's a fire fence. That one's a fire fence. That one I can walk. It's just like a big memorization room.
Gary, you are not allowed to mark these to know which ones are dangerous. That just subverts the whole point.
Yeah, you're just accidentally stepping on fire gates left and right. You're going through a lot of pairs of shoes.
I mean, at least I am. I am so impatient with this kind of stuff. I run into the fire so much.
Yeah.
Then there's that one bit where you actually have to hit a switch in order to drop one certain firewall to reach the end of the level. And in order to navigate it in time, you have to memorize which spots are safe to run through.
Oh, and it's just a mad dash back through the fake firewalls.
Yep. And even then, at the end, it's a fake door.
Oh, yeah. Door mimics. That's kind of new to this temple, right?
We've had in Minish Cap, there was like fake doors that were attached to chains, right? Like those were actual traps.
Right.
These, I think, are monsters.
Mimics, to me, I always correlate mimics to treasure chests.
Sure.
Using a door as a mimic is a fun idea. Do you ever think about doing that in your D&D camp? Pains?
Yes, all the time. I've done like one shots and stuff like that that had similar stuff. I think one of them actually was a door, now that I think about it.
It would be kind of cool if the door gobbled you up. Instead, it kind of just falls like a domino on
it. Just morphs back into a like-like.
Yeah.
but hey, the name like-like, that sure does sound like it'd be better suited for a mimic, right?
Oh, yeah.
It looks like a treasure chest. It looks like a door.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like-likes do kind of trick you. Like, if you don't know the conceit of a like-like, you might get a little too close and it'll bite you up and take your shield. That behavior is even something I could see a mimic in other games do.
Yeah.
Like-likes are like the better version of mimics in the Zelda series, I guess.
That's a step far.
I mean, not aesthetically, functionally.
I think mimics are better than like-likes. That's me personally.
Are there good mimics in these games?
You mean like traditional style? I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. There are no good treasure chest monsters.
Oh, don't give them any ideas. I don't need the equivalent of like the Mario 64 piano. I don't need that in my life, please.
The next room that I think is of note actually is our mini boss room.
Oh yeah. We have three of these, don't we?
We have at least two. Yeah, we might have three.
At least two.
It's where we fight the Flare Dancer.
Flare Dancers are dope.
Flare Dancers are very cool.
Like, I don't know what their deal is or, like, what the mechanics of them are. They're just, like, a little rock dude that, like, can spawn a flaming scarecrow body?
Exactly. That's what I was gonna ask, is do you think the armor and the fire body are two separate entities?
Yeah, I do think it's one entity.
Yeah, and it's got a big old lanky body that it kind of soars around the room.
Can just jettison off its arms and legs with fire and, like, keep it in shape as a fire body.
Yeah, and, like, it shoots fireballs, right?
They can spin and like erupt with fireballs that land on the ground that like you have to avoid for a second.
Right.
Fighting Flare Dancers reminds me a little bit of fighting the second form of Majora at the end of Majora's Mask.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. It has that same body shape, right?
Yeah, where it's tall and lanky and dances and moves quickly and weird.
So like the way you fight these guys is you gotta remove the core or the armor off of its body. And you could do this with like a hookshot or bombs. And once the core is exposed, that cord like kind of just runs around in circles on the ground and you can swipe at it a bunch.
Can I say real quick that Flare Dancer is such like a James Bond title?
Yeah, I kind of like it almost in like the sense that like maybe this is part of a ritual.
Mm-hmm. There's also the idea that like throwing a bomb at a Flare Dancer will kind of remove... This is not great. Is that like throwing a bomb? Because the way that Navi refers to the body of a Flare Dancer is that it has burning clothes. I don't see it that way personally, but that's what Navi says.
I almost think it's the opposite. The body is what's burning and the clothes are what you knock off.
And when you throw a bomb at it, you remove its clothes, which is also a very James Bond thing because James Bond is a terrible person.
Okay, sure.
That's it. I just wanted to point that out.
What are the symbols on the Flare Dancer? Have you seen these?
Symbols? I'm not aware of any.
It looks like a little smiley face.
Enhance.
It's got this like red little... It almost kind of reminds me of the Rebel Alliance symbol.
From Star Wars?
Yeah, with like two little crescent moons above it.
Oh, geez Louise. Yeah, actually, I think I do see that. It's like the Rebel Alliance emblem melted.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Honestly, these things are rad. I would love to see... Because like their arms and legs are needles. Like these, there's a lot going on with these.
This is maybe the coolest mini boss, because like most mini bosses are like, here's a Stalfos, here's two Stalfos, here's three Lizalfos.
That's true. This is really the only there's Deadhand.
Deadhand is the right answer. Deadhand's the coolest mini boss.
And there are Iron Knuckles,
also the right answer.
Also really
this
good.
This is a solid number three in regards to mini bosses.
Is this the best one? Names two more. Is this the third best one?
Please don't name any more mini bosses because it'll just bump this one down further. Moving on from the Flare Dancer fight, there aren't too many other things. So like you defeat the Flare Dancer and the block in the center of the arena becomes like an elevator.
Yeah, we're very into elevators in this temple.
Yeah, we're ascending up a volcano, right? So it all is there to kind of serve the purpose that we're ascending. There's a moment later in the dungeon in one of the rooms where you can actually use a Scarecrow song. We're going to talk about Lake Hylia next episode. At this point, the game gets a little bit less linear than the first half of the game, so you can do different things. You can do temples in different orders and whatnot. You can go to Lake Hylia.
Right.
If you went to Lake Hylia previously, you could have learned the Scarecrow song. And there's a room where, like, you can play the Scarecrow song, call Pierre. Is it actually Pierre the Scarecrow?
I do think it's Pierre.
Heck yeah, it is. And he helps you get to a room that I have to believe is the tippy top of the volcano because of the way it's shaped. And
it's actually a room. It's a room that is equal to the other highest room that we're going to get to.
Okay. So
like these two rooms kind of mirror each other.
There is a lot of like, it feels like there's a wall in the center of this temple and you're seeing the rooms on the right and the rooms on the left, right?
Yes.
Which is cool. I like that about this temple.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. So the room that Pierre brings you up to is mirroring one of the final rooms of the dungeon, which I think is the one that gives you the Megaton Hammer?
Yeah. I think so.
So I didn't really think about this room the majority of the times I've played this game. Now that I've done it for the podcast, I think I love this room.
The ascent up? The circular room?
Like the pit rooms?
Yeah. Dompé also has one of these, doesn't he?
Dompé's body fell into one of these, for sure. So in the one that you encounter as a normal part of the dungeon, not Pierre related, you make it up to the bottom of this room. It's like a large round chamber with a very, very, very big pit at the center that leads like 7 floors down in the dungeon.
Oh, you could straight up fall down it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But the whole point of the room is that you're going to activate a switch and you're going to run up a staircase, like a spiral staircase that goes around the outside of the pit.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, if you make it in time, reach a treasure chest that was previously surrounded by fire.
Twinova fire, apparently.
Exactly. Thank you. See, you understand now, Chris. The majority of the puzzles are made by Twinrova. She's the puzzle master.
She He's the puzzle master.
But the thing about this room is, like, why would a temple have a huge circular room with steps going around the center to a top dais to where, like, you know, there's torches and such? Looks like a kind of important room.
Yeah. I mean, it needed to have a top of the volcano, right? Like, sure, they built a temple here. They can't neglect the fact that it is also a volcano and needs to maybe erupt sometimes.
Well, here's the thing. This room could be either a sacrificial chamber.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Where people are brought up and thrown into the pit.
Uh-huh.
Or this is like a judgment chamber where, like, the judge sits at the top and you're brought up there to, like, state your case, and if you are guilty, you're just chucked in.
Oh boy, these are both grim. Neither of these seem like typical Goron activities.
No, it doesn't. But like, this place is super old. Who knows?
The thing I like about what you're putting down here is I really like the idea of a Goron sitting as a judge,
yeah,
and wearing that judge wig. I think it's known as a peruke or a headpiece. And I know we have some very great artists in our community. Please, please, please draw a Goron wearing that judge wig.
Yes, a judge wig. And what does a judge swing when they give their verdict?
A megaton hammer.
A big old hammer.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm on board. I'm on board.
So we get to the top of those stairs, we get the hammer of judgment, and we're able to, like, break apart parts of the dungeon on our way back down.
But Goron are so friendly. Like, I don't think Goron would sentence each other to the... And also, a Goron that gets thrown to the pit of a volcano is still a happy Goron, I think, all things considered.
Gorons are so happy and nice. Now. They're happy today.
Okay.
We don't know what they were like before.
I think it's safe to assume, considering Skyward Sword, pretty much the same demeanor. Maybe they were a little bit smarter.
Maybe it was the Machma.
Maybe it was the Machma. That's where they went.
The collapse of their society is depicted in the Fire Temple, for sure.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. The tiny, skinny little stairs for the Magma's little, tiny legs. That's perfect.
They just tie them up and they just push them off the plank, essentially.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, boy. All right. Anyway, on the other half, the non-Megaton hammer half, I think there's like a gold rupee as well as a Skulltula.
Hey, guess who had a full wallet when they found that?
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Finding gold rupees feels good like half of the time in this game. It really...
Honestly.
Oh, boy. I'm kind of glad that we don't have wallet enhancements in modern 3D Zelda games.
You just have a borderline infinite wallet to start with, except you almost never find money in Breath of the Wild.
You get it for quests.
You get money sometimes for quests, yeah. But mostly you have to sell your stuff, which you're later you're going to wish you hadn't because you needed to upgrade your equipment.
All right. We're not talking about Breath of the Wild. So you mentioned...
Objection. We're actually always talking about Breath of the Wild. We're in court right now, so I'm going to state my case.
Speaking of court, you mentioned that Megaton hammer. We don't have to fight a boss to get the weapon in this dungeon. That's kind of interesting. That's unique, right?
I mean, we've fought like at least two flare dancers up to this point, so right. I don't know if that counts.
I guess. But yeah, there's no boss directly before getting the Megaton hammer.
Yeah, that's true.
Now that we have this hammer, what's the purpose of it, generally speaking?
Break stuff.
So it does have an attack radius. It's really not the most conventional weapon to attack with.
Yeah, it's really slow.
But it breaks big boulders all over the place.
Breaks certain big boulders. There's still other ones you can't fully break yet.
See, and this is the thing that drives me crazy about Ocarina of Time. I mentioned it a few episodes ago. The Venn diagram of things items do, it just like crosses over so much, right? Like, like you have the gloves that let you pick up bombs, and then you have the hammer that lets you break boulders, and then later we'll get another thing that lets you move bigger boulders.
Yeah, worse boulders.
Right, you get the hookshot and the long hookshot. You get the slingshot and the bow and arrow. It's just like everything is like a slight enhancement. It almost feels like things are upgrades of each other as opposed to brand new items.
It really is, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully they kind of figured stuff out with the claw shots and Skyward Sword where you can zip from wall to wall.
Yeah.
You know, there's modifications you can do that makes it feel different instead of just another but better.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, though, you mentioned like later you have the ability to break other rocks that you can't break with a Megaton hammer.
Right.
I find that completely childish.
Why?
Because if you have the big smashy weapon, you should be able to smash whatever you want.
I agree.
But instead, like, you have to wait to get a certain color of gauntlet that lets you pick up the boulder and throw it, and that breaks it?
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, dropping it, like, what, 3 feet off the ground, then, like, that shatters it, but a megaton hammer won't do it.
It really kind of lightens the blow of what the megaton hammer should be able to accomplish. I kind of agree with you there.
Yeah, no, it's nickel and diming the abilities out, and I really don't appreciate that. There's one room in this game in Goron City, I don't remember if we talked about it in the Goron City episode, where it's full of different colors of boulder.
Yeah, we talked about that briefly, yep.
We did? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I don't touch that room until I have everything in the game, because I don't want to break open certain boulders with bombs and then get one item, then break open other boulders with the hammer to get another thing, and then come back with the gauntlets to get the third thing.
Yeah.
Just give me everything. That's ridiculous.
I know what you mean. I mean, after you play this game a few times, you just get into that flow and you don't waste time like that, but I know what you mean. Best to hold off on that specific room. Another few things. So these faces, you're going to want to break all these face tiles. You'll find skull chillers behind some of them. You'll find that some of them will completely lower platforms from a higher floor of the dungeon to a lower floor of the dungeon.
You're talking about that pillar that you shake loose, from the top floor, like in the insane trapapalooza that you have to, you know, deal with,
right?
But then that pillar shakes loose and falls down into the room where you saw Darunia,
and that's how you get to the boss door later,
right?
Which is kind of a cool touch. There's also these rusted over Twin Rover switches.
Oh yeah, bad buttons.
Yeah.
Like they're just broken.
They're just broken. That's the Gerudo symbol, isn't it?
That's the Gerudo symbol.
Why is the Gerudo symbol in the fire temple?
Because Twin Rova's the puzzle master and she has to put everything around here.
Sorry. Yes, Twin Rova's the puzzle master. That's why. Your mom handles the whole thing. Your mom is Goma. Ganondorf's mom is the puzzle master. This is a game about tragic moms.
Yes, exactly. So we're the son of the spider versus the son of the puzzle master. And that's the story of the game.
Oh boy.
Not sure how this button rusted over to the point where you have to use the Megaton hammer. Maybe that's the trick. I don't know.
I guess so, yeah.
This is around the point where Twin Robo realized he's just stepping on them. I didn't know he would just do that. So like, what if we just made it hard to work?
But like, you would think they'd put a rock over it or something, right? Like the rusty switch to me makes sense for the water temple.
What if they just put the button on the ceiling?
That would have solved it, huh? She didn't think about that. I'm pretty much out of rooms. Do you have any other rooms?
Not really. There's just like the bottom two rooms that you can enter from the foyer, which like one has the boss key.
Yeah.
This whole area, like, because you only access this once you have the Megaton hammer to swing aside different chunks of the totem pole.
Which is a cool moment.
It is pretty neat, honestly. I don't like this part of the game, because by this point, you've already knocked the pillar down, you have the weapon, you've made your way all the way back down the entire temple you've been doing this entire time, mm-hmm. at least two mini bosses, and then like, oh hey, here's just some random rooms with just some torch slugs.
Yeah, this route is specifically to get you to the boss key, which is hidden behind another Flame Dancer fight, if I'm remembering right?
Yeah, it just goes in a big loop. Here's another Flame Dancer. Here's a room full of torch slugs. Here's another like sauna room. And then you make it back to this very first, maybe, I think probably the first Goron you see in the dungeon, because you see a door to the left and you go see it.
Right.
But so you free them last, you get the boss key, and then that's it. Like it just feels like a last second extension to the dungeon.
There's something kind of cool about revisiting the first room and opening it up in a new way once you have the weapon. But I'm kind of with you, especially just reusing it to have a boss fight you've had multiple times.
Yeah.
It's like padding. It's like fluff. It
definitely feels like padding.
Doesn't show anything new and cool like some of these trap rooms. Like, whether or not you like the trap rooms is one thing, but at least it's like a unique room and experience. And on that note, I'm ready to talk about the boss arena coming up. Are you?
I have been ready, for sure.
You want to introduce this boss?
Oh, are you referring to the subterranean lava dragon, Volvagia? Volvagia
sounds more like putting respect on the name, right? Volvagia.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard Volvagia. I guess people think because it sounds like magma.
Volvagia are the people who say Navi.
No. No. Then I guess Volvagia is correct then.
You call it Volvagia and I'll call it Volvagia. All right. So the intro to this boss fight is very cool.
Yeah.
The feel of this arena is great. The fight itself is kind of bizarre though.
There are some big bosses in this game. Like you get Bongo Bongo, pretty big.
Ooh.
Like you get Baronade, pretty big.
Yeah.
Volvagia, despite not being much bigger than them, it's one of the smaller bosses, especially of this part of the game.
Yeah.
But it feels the biggest. It does. You know?
Yeah. So Volvagia is a dragon that sort of just flies into the room, and it kind of is reminiscent of the Breath of the Wild dragons, right?
Kind
of,
yeah. Chinese-inspired dragon.
Yeah, just very thin and sort of long. This one specifically looks like it's made of molten rock and lava.
Yep.
It's got a cool fiery haircut, as everything else did in 1998.
I'm wondering what Volvagia looked like before Ganondorf raised it from the dead, because I think, I forget who tells you that. Was it a junior?
Yeah. A junior tells you, I mean, I think a junior really tells you about the fight between the prior hero and Volvagia.
Yeah. Maybe it was Navi. It might've been Navi who said that the dragon was revived by Ganondorf.
Okay.
It's like, this is one of the few monsters that was not like created from whole cloth. This was like necromancy, which I think is dope.
Oh, so this is like a skeleton lava dragon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm into it. Yeah.
This is dry Volvagia.
Dry Volvagia.
So there's one more thing that Navi says about this boss, okay?
Okay.
She refers to Volvagia as the boss of the fire temple.
Oh, interesting.
Navi, be cool.
Yeah, she's nodding at the camera a little bit there.
Don't poke holes in the fourth wall, Navi. Come on.
maybe like Volvagia keeps the place running. Maybe it's a well-oiled machine and that's because Volvagia.
Oh, so not just the boss, like the foreman.
The foreman, yeah.
Keeps the furnace running somewhere.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Yeah, the arena itself is like this platform with 9 little holes into lava. Link kind of walks out on a platform with Zonai swirls. I guess not Zonai swirls, Kokiri swirls.
I don't know about that.
Sorry, we're done with Zonai swirls. Kokiri swirls, and then jumps onto this lava platform. And yeah, Volvagia flies in and kind of dives into and out of the craters on this platform.
So, firstly, Darunia not here.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so here's the thing about that. Volvagia is not that big, like, speaking of the skull. Did Volvagia eat Darunia and, like, unhinge its jaw like a snake, or...
Oh, Peter, this is not that kind of podcast.
What does Darunia taste like?
No, what? Was that genuine? Do I have to do this now?
No, that's not real.
Okay. I mean, I think Darunia ate it. I think that's why Darunia is no longer here. I don't think that he ate it because Volvagia ate it.
Did he just fall in the lava?
But you would think that a Goron could withstand that.
Well, yeah, maybe. It's not really clear how resistant Gorons are to lava.
Yeah, I just kind of assume.
Because they relax in hot springs and such, not lava pools.
Not literal lava, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. All we know is Darunia is not here, and that's bad news for Darunia. But let's talk about this actual fight a little bit.
Oh, it's whack-a-mole, first off.
It's whack-a-mole.
Volvagia is going to, at points, dive down into one of these flaming holes on the ground, which you can run onto safely for periods of time. Just don't stay on them. You can run across them.
Yeah.
And every so often, they'll pop out and they'll first whip their fire mane at you, which is awesome.
Right.
After that point, you crack its skull with the Megaton Hammer to knock it out for a second so you can go to town.
Yeah. When you go to town, do you usually keep going at it with the Megaton Hammer, or do you switch to your sword?
No, I switch to the Bigoron sword.
That's the ticket, because you could take this out in like one or two phases if you switch to the Bigoron sword.
For sure. Bigoron sword, jump slash, done.
There's also moments where while it's flying in the air, it'll fly a little bit lower to the ground. At that point, you can hit it with a bow and arrow.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I love it when a boss gives you options. Granted, you can't deliver the finishing blow with a bow and arrow. They don't let you do that.
No.
But the fact fact that you can like chip away at it is really good. Like more bosses need to give you like alternate options to fight it.
I agree. Similarly, if you have the Bigoron sword out while it's doing that, you can just hit it. You could just reach it, which is cool. Eventually it goes down, lets you hammer it a few times. There's a phase where it goes all the way up and starts dropping rocks down from the ceiling.
I think it's like rattling the ceiling so that they like fall down.
Yeah. You can kind of just hang off of the side of the arena until the rocks stop dropping and it'll pop back out and be vulnerable to another big bonk. But I mean, that's kind of it.
It's surprisingly easy for how intimidating it is.
Do you think that this guy is at all related to Valu?
I think he might have been when he was alive.
Yeah, maybe.
Before right? He was necromantic, because we don't know exactly what he looked like before.
Right. And the thing about Valu is, if you think about Dragon Roost Island, Dragon Roost Island may have had signs that it was built by Goron, right? Like, it's right. Not inhabited by Goron. It's inhabited by Rito, but it's like a Goron structure. And I think that, if I remember correctly, there are signs of dragon, red dragon worship, which is implied to be Valu in Wind Waker, I guess. But like,
yeah,
could also kind of be tied to...
It could be a nepotism thing. Like, whatever the current red dragon is, we worship that.
Hey, there are worse things to worship than a red dragon. Red dragons are cool. Yeah. Especially when they're skeleton dragons.
Yeah, I'm sure. Absolutely. Okay, because in Dragon Roost Cavern, there's depictions of dragon on the walls.
Right, right, right.
Right, which, I mean, I forget the exact depiction, and I also watched like a Zelda Theory video about this. I wish I could remember, but like, it did seem to imply that there was some kind of lasting memory of Volvagia here in the mountain before the Gorons left and the Rito came in.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it could be related. I mean, what's the implication, though, if they are related, that like Volvagia, while he was alive, or she was alive, left an egg here?
Ooh, I like that.
And then it took like 1,000 years to hatch.
I mean, look at it this way. The Great Deku Tree sapling we see start in this game and resolve in the Wind Waker. We see that thing grow up.
That's true. I'd be curious to know how a Chinese-inspired dragon gave way to a European-style dragon, but...
Is it European? Okay, fair enough. So once we defeat Volvagia, we actually see the skeleton dragon turn into a literal skeleton in the sky, and its poor little head just kind of like burns to a crisp, except for its skull, which I think falls
yes.
on the floor in front of Link, which is just like, oh.
Why is this not a mask in Breath of the Wild?
A Volvagia mask?
Yes. That it's would so be very cool.
That would be very cool. So then after that, Link gets warped into a crystal, assumedly to get taken to the Chamber of Sages, but we see a big explosion come from the volcano.
Oh yeah, the roof guy in Kakariko gets knocked on his butt.
Yeah, he completely eats dirt. And the malice above Death Mountain disappears. So like, you know, we made a tangible difference to the world map by beating this dungeon.
Always good. We didn't get anything like that really for the Forest Temple, except for the fact that there's not monsters in Kokiri Forest anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, but no one knows that place exists, so like, whatever.
Right, after the Forest Temple, I got news for you. You're probably not going back to Kokiri Forest ever again.
No, we're not allowed to live there anymore.
Yeah, so you're not going to even notice. I really love the idea that you're slowly changing the map, though. I mean, you see that in later games, but to see it back in 1998 is very cool. And then we get warped to the Chamber of Sages. We see Darunia here.
Oh, hey, Darunia. Where were you, dog?
Hey, you okay, man? How you feeling? He says, thank you, brother. I really appreciate what you did. I thank you on behalf of the entire Goron race. By the way, I, the wild Darunia, turned out to be the Great Sage of Fire. Isn't that funny, brother? Well, this must be what they call destiny. Nothing has made me happier than helping you seal the evil here. This is a medallion that contains the power of the fire spirits and my friendship.
We get our second dinner plate.
Our second little Pokemon badge. And it's the fire medallion. Darunia then has a parting line where he says, don't forget, now you and I are true brothers.
It's a shame that when you receive an elemental medallion, you don't get some kind of elemental ability.
Would you like it if this is where you got something like Dense Fire?
Sure.
Instead of from a Great Fairy?
Or either one, you know what I mean? Like if you get some spells or whatever from each place, like if you get the fire medallion and get Dense Fire that way, that'd be great.
That could be interesting.
Getting it from the Great Fairies, that works too, because it's based on the goddesses. It'd have a different, you know, theming to it. Like maybe make Din's fire cost more magic and then give a smaller fire spell for the fire medallion.
Right. Let them use one of the two to enhance Din's fire.
Or that.
Or to enhance Furor's wind.
Sure.
Right. So like you get it from the medallion, and then if you find the fairy, it reduces the cost or whatever.
Oh yeah, that's an interesting idea too. It's if it's an upgrade, yeah.
But yeah, I think we're taking modern sensibilities and applying them back to a 1998 game. Like,
sure.
I agree with you. That would have been a cooler solution, but it is what it is.
So Darunia is no longer Darunia. He's the Sage of Fire. His previous personality is slowly being overwritten.
Yeah.
So we're going to say goodbye now.
I mean, we still get a mostly Darunia version of Darunia in this cutscene, at least, as opposed to the quiet, empty Saria that we got last episode.
He uses similar words, but I don't think Darunia is in there.
There's no grumble in that voice anymore.
He speaks very politely, like he works in an office.
Yeah, and I guess on that note, I guess we could take it back over to the quiz show that's taken America by storm.
Yes, love this.
We got another iteration of Master Quest Question Masters.
Quick question, Chris. It's not all of the above, is it?
No. In this case, it is not.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to give you five options.
Okay.
One of them is false.
Okay.
You tell me which one you think is false.
Okay, great.
Just to explain the rules, I'm going to give a bunch
that
of...
That wasn't the rules?
It was the rules to you, but if this is someone's first episode, just to explain the rules to someone who might be listening for the first time,
uh-huh.
I'm going to spout off a bunch of changes made to the Master Quest version of this dungeon. One of these may be false. Pete's got to find which one of these is likely false. So, choice number one, boulders are removed from the maze room and replaced with Lizalfos.
Ooh.
Option number two, there is a room in which you fight dual Stelfos.
Okay.
Option number three, new fire puzzles, such as a gate at the bottom of the stairs in the first room with the staircase.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And needing to light the fire in the statue's mouths in that first room as well.
Oh, I hope that's a real one.
Option number four, there's an iron knuckle you have to fight in one of the rooms now.
Jesus, okay.
And option number five, crystallized cows in the fire pits.
Wait, hang on. Crystallized?
Crystallized cows in the fire pits.
Can you clarify on that?
The crystal that Link teleports out of the dungeon in, but red, just hanging out in the pits of the fire.
I'm gonna go with the crystallized cows.
You think that is the one option that they wouldn't have put in the fire temple?
Why would that be here?
Do you remember the Great Deku Tree and Jabu Jabu's belly?
Were there cows in the Great Deku Tree?
There were cows all over the Great Deku Tree and Jabu Jabu's belly.
Well, okay. Maybe not that then.
I mean, you could be onto something, to be clear. I could be just trying to divert you. I am not your friend in this. I am merely the host of the show.
You're the puzzle master now.
I am the puzzle master. Ooh, the power.
Let's see. I'm already forgetting the options, but I'm going to say it's the iron knuckle.
You were right on your first guess. It's the crystallized cows.
Stop, really?
There is an iron knuckle fight in the Master Quest version of the Fire Temple. There's also a dual Stelfos fight, a bunch of new fire puzzles. Boulders are removed from the maze room and Lizalfos jump down into the maze as you're traversing.
That's pretty cool.
There's a bunch more breakable walls in the maze room. Timed bomb puzzles in there as well.
Cool.
The moving firewall that forces you to run over the grating actually never pops up in Master Quest. Isn't that weird?
What? Yeah. Wait, what do they do with that room then?
You could just take it at your own pace.
What?
There's like different, I think there's different enemies. I forget.
Oh, okay.
There's also time block puzzles where you have to like use the Song of Time to move a time block along the room with the firewalls.
Well, that sounds tedious, but okay.
And after one of the fights with the fire dancers, you have to trigger the elevator but then jump off the elevator and get a small key that was hiding under the elevator.
Oh, like what I did originally but found nothing.
Yeah, exactly. That pays off in Master Quest.
I'm ahead of the game here.
So you did, I will give it to you, you did kind of get suspicious about the one
yeah, what if it's this leading the witness?
Hey, that's how the game's played. You want
to you are in contempt of court. I'm gonna have to kick you into the pit.
Well, you know what's in that pit is our Tyrannosaurus recommendations.
Oh, I completely forgot.
Wait, do you not have T-Rex?
No, I don't have any.
Do you have a motto?
No.
What, Pete?
I completely forgot. I've been playing Tears of the Kingdom, dude.
Yeah, bud, me too. But I still made time to write down some T-Rex and a motto. All right, so I'm going to give mine, and then Pete's going to think of some on the fly.
Mother.
And if any of his are better than any of mine, I'm going to be just deeply ashamed in my core. My best bite is, and tell me if I did this one already.
Okay.
A like Jell-O mold.
How does that work?
Like-likes in this game look like Jell-O molds. They look like those multi-layer. So you just heat them up for long enough in the fire temple, right? And then they have the consistency of Jell-O.
Oh, so you melt them back, you melt them down and then reconstitute them in a mold.
Yeah.
What? Okay, did we already do what does like taste like? Did we already do that?
I genuinely do not know.
What does a like taste like, Chris?
Oh, you're just buying time. That's not fair. Like-likes. I don't know. Like-like, you look at a like-like and it's just like the most amorphous, like nothing looking thing in just the whole series. It looks like a edible bag. It doesn't even look edible. Like that's, I'm saying no. It looks edible because you're forcing me to think in that way.
I mean, I can see where you're coming from, where if it's like kind of gelatinous.
I guess gelatinous is like the best thing you can do with it. It does look like if you turn it on its side and you roast it, maybe you can slice it up and get like some slices, some like slices, and like I don't know, maybe there's some juiciness to it if it's fruity at all. But it's green, so I just think, oh, it's gonna be sour. What do you think a like tastes like?
Unfortunately, I feel like a like tastes like whatever it's been eating.
Oh, that's a good answer. Yeah, that's a fair answer.
So it's probably very kind of coppery. Like it can't be pleasant.
Okay. My attraction is going to be, so there's such a no-brainer easy one. I'll leave that for you. So I'm going to take a different one, not my primary one. I think it would be fun to have a red light, green light, 1, 2, 3 room in the firewall room.
What?
So like there's someone at the end of a room and there's like 3 people who are playing red light, green light, 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
But they also have to navigate around the firewalls that sporadically pop up from the pillars. So it's like American Ninja Warrior version of red light, green light, 1, 2, 3. And my photo op, I just want a selfie from Kakariko while the volcano is exploding behind you.
Oh, dang. That's a good one.
Yeah, just like that purple mist, like the malice clearing the air.
Okay. Respect.
Do you want to give your Rex now? Or do you want me to just give my motto?
Hang on. My photo op is taking a selfie while riding the magic bean sprout plant around the Death Mountain crater.
Okay.
Yeah, because you can get some good shots that way, yeah, right?
It's kind of like a fire-themed roller coaster ride.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
My recommended attraction is Whack-A-Mole in...
There you go.
In the boss room.
I gave it... I handed that to you.
My recommended best bite is Torch Slug Barbecue Parfaits.
Whoa, what do you think that would... What does a torch slug taste like? Oh.
I feel okay. So here's the thing about torch slugs. When you take the fire off, they're kind of colorless and nothing, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like most likely it is like a flavorless, almost tofu like protein substitute situation. But I feel like if you have like a barbecue parfait, if you've ever had one of those where it's not ice cream, but it's like mashed potato, barbecue sauce, sure, and like pulled pork or something,
ooh,
you take that, you soak the slug in barbecue sauce, and then you layer that with mashed potato.
I love that. You're truly stating something delicious, but you slip the word slug in there as to spend almost no time with it, because it is just the grossest word that could be in that otherwise delightful sentence.
I've been listening to a lot of I Choose You.
Uh-huh. Okay. Perfect.
Motto's going to be hard. Motto's going to be a tough one for me.
Okay. Let me give you my motto first and see if it inspires anything. My motto is Fire Temple. Get hammered and dance the night away.
Not bad.
Originally, it was get hammered and flame dance the night away, but I feel like that's too on the nose.
No, that's even better. Are you kidding? Go with that.
Okay. Get hammered and flame dance the night away then.
No, that's really good. I could see that on a t-shirt, honestly.
Mottos for dungeons is like the cruelest decision you've made for the show.
But it's, I don't know, I think it's fun.
It is fun. It is fun when it works. It's very painful when it doesn't.
How about, oh boy, the Fire Temple. Court is in session.
A motto that only makes sense specifically if you listen to this episode.
I was just going to say the Fire Temple objection, but that's nothing. That's just like a video game thing.
Oh, man. Those poor Magma. I can't get it out of my head now that the Magma were the one sentenced down to the pit of the volcano.
It was infighting. They you know, dwindled their own numbers just through a lot of meaningless capital punishment. You know what I mean?
Totally. No, yeah. I mean, it was always going to happen somehow. It's just a shame when you figure out the details of what truly happened.
Well, yeah, honestly.
All right. And on that note, I guess it's about time for us to head on into the post office.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
Post office.
Post office. Office
in the Fire Temple.
Yeah, surprisingly toasty at this time of year, actually.
A lot of paper around, though, so that feels like a little bit of a hazard.
Yeah, another place you don't want to have your post office.
Maybe we should get through these emails before we start a little crisis here.
Water Temple, definitely not another place.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay, first email in we got from Rebecca. Rebecca says, "Hi, I really got into The Legend of Zelda over the summer, and I'm currently binge playing the series. I've gotten through Breath of the Wild, Ocarina, Twilight Princess, and half of Skyward Sword.
Nice.
Just moved to university last week, and I don't have a TV, so I can't finish Skyward Sword. But I moved pretty far away from home, and I just wanted to say thank you. Found Hello Hyrule right before I left home, and I laughed a lot when I probably should have been focusing on driving to the university."
Oh, no.
"But those first few days were really hard, and whenever I turned on your guys' podcast, I laughed instead of cried and felt a little less alone. And listening to the podcast always made me feel better. It's a lot of fun hearing Pete's wild theories and Chris's cool facts. I love whenever you guys notice and talk about something I noticed while playing, and it's so fun digging into the lore when you're not supposed to. I haven't even gotten halfway through all your Skyward Sword episodes, but I can't wait to listen to Ocarina of Time. If The Legend of Zelda has taught me anything, it's to have courage, so thanks for sort of being my companions like Navi.
Navi.
I started playing Majora's Mask, and hopefully by the time you guys start talking about it, I'll be caught up with the episodes. From one Zelda enthusiast to two other enthusiasts, thanks for making and sticking with Hello Hyrule, the premier Legend of Zelda travelogue. It means a lot to me."
Rebecca, I'm gonna cry.
Yeah, this was such a sweet email to come in.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you, Rebecca. You know, I'm sorry to hear that the first few days of university were tough. I think Pete and I have kind of both been there as well.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm glad that Hello Hyrule helped out a bit during that process. And if you ever want like a community of people to talk to about sort of these hobbies, try to find our Discord. I guess you're not going to be listening to the Ocarina season for a while, so I don't know who I'm talking to with this. But if anyone out there feels this way, jump in the Discord, because there's a lot of very like-minded people that you can talk to about like hobbies and whatnot.
Honestly, a lot of cool people.
Yeah. But it meant a lot to read this. It was a very sweet, sincere email. So thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And we hope things got better over the following weeks. Do you want to take this next one?
Well, our next postcard is from Cherry. "Hello, Chris and Pete. After a year, I'm finally seeking out the Triforce of Courage to send a postcard. Thank you for this awesome podcast. It's become one of my favorite forms of entertainment to listen to while gaming, especially while I play Zelda. It's really helping me stay focused on the game and reminds me how I have to approach some of the puzzles. While unfortunately I couldn't finish Skyward Sword before Tears released, I'm looking forward to continuing my journey through the young Hyrule with the podcast as my companion. I haven't finished Minish Cap yet, but I love listening to the second season while playing Tears of the Kingdom. So I hope you feel flattered that I listened to it quite a lot and probably have heard every episode of every season 2 times at least by now."
That's so wild.
Repeat listener, nice. "I'm looking forward to continuing this journey through the different eras of Hyrule with you guys. The podcast has really motivated me to play more of the Zelda games myself, since I have only finished Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, and Breath of the Wild so far. So thank you again for this show, as well as for the Discord where I love hanging out. I'm looking forward to community events like playing a randomizer together or watching a certain cartoon. I will sacrifice my sleep should you plan to watch it together one day. May the goddess Hylia smile upon you, and greetings from Germany."
Yeah.
Dang. Nice.
Thank you, Cherry. Cherry is a member of our Discord community. We love having Cherry in the Discord. It's funny, like everyone in the mornings here will be like, "Oh, hey, good morning, good morning." And like Cherry's always like, "It's nighttime by me." So everyone in the Discord started just saying, "Good good zone, just as an abbreviation of good whatever time zone it is.
Was that the start of good zone?
Okay. But yeah, Cherry's been a valuable member of our Discord for months. Cherry would jump in when we were streaming Ocarina randomizers and whatnot. And it's great to see you write in, Cherry. Thank you for writing in.
Oh, and also, there is zero pressure to play any of the Zelda games. Like, if you don't have to play a single one to be a fan. Would you say that's true?
I would fully agree. I think you could absolutely be a fan of a series just having watched it on YouTube. Like, there's no pressure.
I was a fan of Metroid before I touched a single game.
For sure. For sure. It's wild to think people have listened to our seasons, like, twice. I can't even go back and listen to our first season a second.
I could do season three. Season three was short and funny.
Season three was very brief. Yeah, that is one point in its favor. All right, this next email comes in from Winston. Winston says, "Salutations, Chris and Pete. I'm Winston, and your podcast helps make work a little more tolerable. Thank you for creating such an uplifting piece of artwork that is your podcast."
Pete, is this art?
I don't know if we've reached the art tier.
When I mentioned eating David Jr. in a freak panic at the end of season two, that was art. I have a theory, Winston says, that I thought up of while listening to you podcast about Deku Scrubs. What if Deku Scrubs are Bulblins from Twilight Princess? The Scrubs from Ocarina of Time don't seem to be totally evil until you had to kill Queen Goma, aka Link's mom, after you defeat them. In Twilight Princess, King Bulblin says that he serves the strongest side, and that is all he ever knew. Also, Bulblins are green, and that can be a supporting fact if what you say about Saria and her green hair is true. They may have evolved into Bulblins or merged with a group of Bokoblins to become them, but I don't really know. That's just a theory, and probably has a lot of holes in it, but this is my first one. Thank you both so much, and very, very much not. Excuse me, podcast.
Okay.
Let's dive in.
Okay.
First of all, if that was your first theory, that was a pretty good effort. You had a few supporting little facts to it.
Yeah, you backed it up. I'll give you that. You backed it up.
We have taken a lot less and stated it as gospel around these parts. So, I like
that. That said, not everything that's green is a plant.
You're telling me. Let's go back to that.
It's
first
a squares
episode.
And squares and rectangles. It's a squares and rectangles situation.
I do like the specifically the line of serving the strongest side, and that's all he ever knew. That is very much like kind of going back to the Deku Scrub in the Great Deku Tree.
That's true.
But yeah, I don't know. I think I almost would like it a little bit more if it was the other way around. Mm-hmm. Like Bulblins feel like a mix between Bokoblins and Deku Scrubs.
I'm gonna be honest with both of y'all, I don't see Deku Scrub on any of this. Which part looks like Deku Scrub?
I kind of don't see Deku Scrub other than like maybe like a dark green color palette. They definitely seem like distant relatives to Bokoblins, though.
Yes. I mean, you got I would say so.
Yeah, so it's all
in
the family.
Yeah, they're Blins, so I think they're similar enough in that regard. But like, maybe?
But yeah, that's a fun theory. And thank you. I'm glad that the podcast can make work a little bit more tolerable. I don't know about the work being art yet. That's very generous of you to say. And I appreciate that considering how much time we put into it. But I would be okay with accepting the fact that maybe it's not artwork just yet.
I think it's just like a good time. I would settle for a good time.
Yeah, I would appreciate even that much for sure. We also have a couple of reviews down here. Do you want to read this first one?
Yes. 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. From Carl. Hey, listen. Hello, I love your pod and want to tell you that you're doing great. I heard about you through the Legend of Zelda Lorecast. Thanks, guys. And find it so cool that you turned Hyrule into a tourist hotspot. It was very original. It was the best idea of 2023 to give a whole episode to Lon Lon Ranch, and it gave me a good laugh. If you could live on any side of Clocktown, which would you choose? I would take West. Bye.
Huh. Pete, you enter this first. I'm like frantically figuring out what thing was on what sides of Clocktown again.
I feel like I answered this at some point.
I think you actually answered this during the episode with Celeste for Lon Lon Ranch.
Yeah. What did I say, though? Oh, wait. I think East. I think it would be East because that's where the inn is and that's where the milk bar is and there's a lot of games and stuff.
It's got to be East. You got Honey and Darling Shop, Mayor's Residence, yeah. Milk Bar, Shooting Gallery, Inn, and Treasure Shop.
It's the only place you can buy food.
Yeah. You can kind of get everything you need in that one spot. Like, what's North Clocktown is just like the Deku Scrub playground. West Clocktown, the bomb shop, the bank, curiosity shop, lottery shop.
Granted, Clocktown East is adjacent to the sewer.
It is. It is. That's the one trade-off.
Important to take that into account.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but I do think that's probably like the most inhabitable section of Clocktown. So that is also my answer.
That's fair.
I will read this 5-star review on Apple Podcasts from Shiny Star. Shiny Star says, I listen to every episode as soon as it comes out.
Oh, that's it. That's the whole...
Thank you, Shiny Star.
Thank you for the succinct postcard.
Yeah, that was a nice and easy one to read. And perfect timing, because the whole post office around us is in flames.
It was bound to happen soon, huh?
Yeah, I think it's time we get out of here.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea.
Yeah!
If you have any opinions on The Pit, you can send us a postcard at HyrulePod@gmail.com or by dropping us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read your message here, and you'll be helping more listeners like you to find the show. You can also find the show on Twitter, Insta, and Tumblr at HyrulePod. And if you want to find us individually on Twitter, I am at The Edge of My Pete.
And I am at a man named Babs. We also have a Ko-fi. If you want more stuff from us, even one-time donation of $1, you'll get access to a bunch of bonus episodes where we talk about other games. We talk about Pete's tabletop RPG based off The Legend of Zelda.
Yes.
If you subscribe for $5, you get access to the documents of that tabletop RPG. I've now built out multiple characters and played at least one game with this RPG, and it's a blast. It's very cool.
Yeah, that was weird.
Also, we have a Discord. If you want to come say hello, if you want to talk about Tears of the Kingdom, if you want to talk about Ocarina, if you want to talk about any of these games or any other games, you know, Pete and I are both in there. You can find the link to the Discord on the socials. We'd love to chat with you. Everyone's really cool in there. It's been a great time so far.
Heck yes.
Similarly, if you have any friends who like The Legend of Zelda and like podcasts, it means the world to us if you recommend us to them. Word of mouth is very valuable to podcasts as they try to grow and reach a larger audience. So, you know, thank you to everyone who's done it in the past, and we appreciate it if you do it. And thank you once again to Chillboy Beats for the use of our intro and outro music. If you want to hear more Synthwave Zelda goodness, you can find his album, The Hero of Synth, on YouTube, Spotify, and Bandcamp. Also, The Hero of Synth 2 has come out since this recording, and it's great.
Yes.
We've heard all the tracks on it. It's a lot of fun. And on that note,
that's going to do it for this episode of Hello Hyrule. Thank you for listening. Next episode, we're stepping away from dungeons for a second.
Yeah.
We're just going to take a nice stroll over to Lake Hylia.
Yeah, things heated up way too much throughout this episode. Literally fought a skeleton dragon.
Time to cool off.
Time to just kick back at the beautiful Lake Hylia.
And have a terrible time fishing.
Yeah.
But until then, I have been Pete.
And I've been Chris.
Excuse me, podcast. Flying tile like rooms.
Flying tile like rooms.
Which?
Doo-da, doo-da, flying tile like rooms.